From some of the most dangerous driving days of the year to potentially disease-bearing insect bites, boating accidents, and wildfires, a summer outdoors comes with hazards and precautions. So public agencies often remind us of health and safety measures appropriate to the season and who to call if and when something should go wrong. We'll look into the most common and timely hazards associated with outdoor recreation and how to prepare for them just ahead on Media Meet. Welcome to WNMU's Media Meet. I'm Bill Hart. Our guests are Marquette County Health Department Medical Director Teresa Frankovich, Marquette County Sheriff's Department Special Operations Spokesman Corporal Errol Lukarainen, and Michigan Department of Natural Resources Recreation Specialist Ron Yesney. Welcome. Let's begin with the agencies represented and their role in reducing the effects of seasonal hazards and mishaps, especially those associated with summer. Yeah, it's a time when most people plan to spend a lot of time outside. What sorts of problems and circumstances is your agency geared toward, and which seem most often to come with the season? Let's begin with you, Errol.
All right. The Sheriff's Department, we patrol the roadways, making sure that everybody's safe on the roads. Our division, the Special Operations Division, we patrol the woods and also the water. Uh-huh. By boats and also four-wheelers and recreational equipment. Okay. And we just want to make sure that, what we do out there is making sure everybody's safe and everybody's going to have a good time, but be responsible also and do the right thing out there.
Pretty busy for search and rescue this summer?
Yes. Yeah, we get called out frequently, and every day is a little bit different, and no one wakes up in the morning and says they're going to get lost or injured out in the woods, and we get... When that happens, we got our search and rescue volunteers in our department ready to respond.
Okay. We'll talk about some of those things later on. Ron, how about your agency?
Yeah, we're working on different programs in the trails world to create safer and better trail systems for people. In the summer usage, we're primarily talking about off-road vehicles and mountain biking. In the off-road vehicle world, we're seeing a lot of growth in that industry. More and more people buying off-road vehicles that aren't necessarily trained to operate off-road vehicles. So we're working on some different training methods. We're also working on developing a better trail system for ORVs. Sure. Right now, the trail systems kind of start and stop in different places, and then they're sometimes connected via municipal roadways, and some of the municipalities open their roadways to off-road vehicle use, and so we're trying to educate people and realize that off-road vehicles can operate safely on roadways, but they're not designed to do that. The law says they have to be single file, 25 mile per hour maximum. So we're working on better trailways, we're working on better signage and connectivity to lessen the interface with people on mountain bikes and off-road vehicles with automobiles.
I see. Okay. Dr. Frankovich, how about the health department?
Well, the health department's focus year-round is on prevention. I think there's more of an emphasis in our health education, certainly in the summer, on safety issues. So everything from immunizations to bicycle helmets, food safety with our environmental health sanitarians. So it's busy time.
Okay. The Michigan Department of Health and Human Services has been urging all residents to protect themselves from mosquito and tick-borne illnesses when they're outside. Let's take them in order. Mosquitoes in Michigan can carry illnesses such as the West Nile virus and Eastern equine encephalitis. I've read the former presents a higher risk for people over 50 and the latter to children 15 and under. How severe are the risks where we are, and how are they identified and treated?
Sure. You're right. I mean, the basic message goes to prevention. Okay. And avoidance of mosquitoes. So, Eastern equine encephalitis is extremely rare. So, certainly not a major issue where we live.
Okay.
West Nile appears every year in Michigan.
We've already had a case in Michigan.
Well, we've had some positive birds already this year, and that's how we do surveillance. And that was downstate. But, you know, we expect there will be cases. Certainly with West Nile, we know 70 to 80% of people who become infected are never symptomatic. So for most people, you don't know you've had it. However, in a small percentage, probably about 1%, people can have severe illness. So again, avoidance in terms of mosquitoes is important.
Okay.
So,
and what are the precautions you recommend in that respect?
Well, I think there are certain environmental things you can do in your home, certainly making sure your screens are intact, that there isn't standing water.
Yeah.
People forget about things like wheelbarrows, flower pots, that type of thing. So avoiding that, being outdoors, having light, loose clothing that covers, avoiding being out at dusk if the mosquitoes are really bad.
Okay.
And then, of course, repellents are a staple. And the most effective are those containing DEET. Mm-hmm. DEET,
Something, I'm sure.
Very long name. So, it actually, using concentrations usually of 10 to 30% is what's recommended.
Okay.
And I think what's important for people to understand is the percent of DEET really just tells you how long it will last. So a 10% DEET will last a couple hours, 30% will last about 5 hours. You don't need to put it on heavily because that doesn't help. So a light coating. And certainly it can be used in even infants over 2 months.
Okay, so it doesn't have to be like 100% DEET.
Correct.
I see things in people's tackle boxes that are just full of this stuff.
Right, and some people will, and you may get a little bit longer protection. But in general, particularly when we're talking about children, the recommendation is more 10 to 30%.
Okay.
And you do have to be careful when you come indoors to wash it off, particularly if you're going to be applying it day after day, so that you don't get that accumulation. And if you're using sunscreen as well, you should put the sunscreen on first.
Okay. Ticks are known to carry Lyme disease and Rocky Mountain spotted fever, both of which are documented in Michigan, but one may be more common here. In 2014, Michigan saw 128 cases of Lyme disease, the second highest ever recorded in the state, and the ticks that bear it apparently are expanding in the Upper Peninsula. What's happening there?
Well, they are. There has been sort of a tick migration. It's deer ticks that carry this particular organism that causes Lyme disease. And we see it primarily in the western half of the Lower Peninsula. And in the UP, almost the entire UP is either called endemic, meaning they've had two or more documented cases in a season.
I see.
Or they have a documented tick population that carries the organism. And everyone, I think, in the UP except Luce, Mackinac, and Chippewa are considered high risk or endemic.
Really?
So it has expanded in the UP. And I think in the UP last year we saw 40 to 50 cases. The year before was a higher year, about 86.
What's the word on prevention in this case?
Well, it really goes to prevention of exposure to the ticks. And we know that DEET actually does help preventatively.
Okay.
And people have also used permethrin on clothing.
Permethrin is getting prescribed a lot, I understand.
Yeah, well, and certainly you can, again, when it has different uses, but in this instance, typically it's used as on clothing, as a preventative measure. And, you know, I think mainly with ticks, though, the idea is avoidance.
Okay.
So it's when you're in wooded areas, tall grasses, those types of things, you really need to be looking for them. And the thing about Lyme disease is really the tick needs to attach and be attached for at least 24 hours. So if people are outside and doing activities, they come in and, you know, each night they inspect before they go to bed, the chance that you're going to have a tick that attaches long enough to cause disease is very small.
Okay, that's good. I understand Rocky Mountain spotted fever is rare, but it comes from a common dog tick. Any observations or precautions there, or is it just not really relevant to our area?
Well, you know, I cover 10 counties in the UP for public health, and it is a reportable illness, and I can't even count a handful of cases in the last 10 years. So it's certainly not something we see in a great amount, but the same precautions apply in terms of tick avoidance.
Okay. There's some people who might not be aware of that they might be allergic to poison ivy or something like that, poison oak. Would some of these precautions related to mosquitoes and ticks work for that as well?
Well,
poisonous plants?
Well, probably only in the sense that, you know, that covering with long, loose clothing, that type of thing, can protect some exposure. But other than that, no. And certainly if people are going to be out and about, they can look up how these things look and try avoidance from that standpoint.
Okay. Summer has a lot of people talking or taking to the woods, which would seem to increase their exposure to animals. CDC says cases of rabies are down to just a few annually. Are there any significant hazards to animal contact in the UP, and how should one approach it?
Well, I'll tell you, again.
I've heard rabies in bats, rabies in skunks for Michigan.
But. Sure. And we have had, it's rare to have rabies in a terrestrial animal in the UP. The last I remember is a fox, I think, in Menominee County a couple of years ago. typically, if we have a positive animal, here it's a bat. But because we know that bats can have contacts with other animals, we certainly have to bear it in mind. Every animal bite is reported through public health, or should be.
Good.
And I review all of those for the 10 counties I cover. And the big message I'd say we have for people is avoid contact with wildlife.
I remember the treatment for rabies, or the rabies series, which was part of the treatment, I remember, used to be just a grueling sort of thing.
Yeah, actually, the treatment for, or the preventative treatment for rabies is actually much different, and it's really no different than a routine vaccination.
Okay.
However, you do have to have a series of vaccines, 4 to 5 of them over a month or so.
Yeah.
So, and it's very expensive. And most people also, if they have a definite exposure, may need immune globulin, which is also extremely expensive. So avoidance is definitely the way to go. And almost everything that I come in contact with for risk with wildlife are people approaching wildlife.
Errol, a whole classification of summer hazards relates to alcohol abuse. A 2013 study showed that the period between Memorial Day and Labor Day is, or bears the 100 deadliest days for teen drivers. 9 of the 10 deadliest days for youth on U.S. highways fall between May and August, and July 4th, which we've just passed, is the deadliest of all. Teens are on break. They have a lot of spare time. As a group, they're using alcohol earlier these days. And now we have the problem of distracted driving from cell phones and other devices. In your estimation, how well are we doing to improve safety?
Well, we're trying to do our best by extra patrols out on the highways. Over the holiday season, we only had 5 fatal crashes that happened in Michigan. And that's down from previous years. Now, distracted driving, there's that's inattention, you know, to be driving, and that usually is a big factor to cause crashes. So distracted driving is a big thing, and it comes back down to...
It's hard to enforce, too.
It's hard to enforce. There are rules, or there are laws for distracted driving, and also texting while driving.
Yeah.
You know, it is illegal to text and drive on a highway or a street in the state of Michigan, and it is enforced. But again, it comes down to the person's safety and maybe pull over, do the right thing before they are, be prepared before they get in the vehicle, make sure the radio stations are pre-tuned, making sure there's no ops hazards in the vehicle. They're not things that fall off the seats and being prepared before you do drive.
Okay. There was an 8% increase in traffic fatalities in up to May of 2015, but the alcohol problem is actually broader than that. Some people die of alcohol-related, or actually more people die of alcohol-related falls, I'm told, than from alcohol-related traffic accidents. It would also seem to pose a hazard. We talked about highways here, but boaters and off-road vehicle users. Have we seen much of this in recent years? And is any special attention being directed to, you know, to alcohol use and off-road stuff?
Well, the Sheriff's Department, we patrol the waterways and also on the four-wheelers, so we direct our patrols to...
You're actually ticketing drunken boaters.
Correct.
And stuff like
yep,
that, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, and also for ORV use, you know, operate while intoxicated. And so we're out there patrolling, but, you know, we can't be everywhere all the time. So, you know, it's you know, people need to use the right judgment and make the right choices. And the law states, you know, if you're driving a motor vehicle, driving an ORV or a boat, the alcohol limits are the same throughout the across the board.
Third most preventable cause of death in the United States. Ron, do you have any comments related to ORV use and alcohol, or even you know, taking other things in the recreation area.
Well, what we've seen is, you know, alcohol and recreational activity don't mix very well in terms of safety. The ORV world, in terms of the clubs and the organizations and the people that represent the manufacturers, have are starting to follow the same formula that the snowmobile world did, and that was the International Association of Snowmobile Administrators and the Michigan Snowmobile Association took a zero tolerance policy on alcohol, and that really minimized our fatalities and the number of crashes on snowmobile trails. So now this zero tolerance policy is being interwebbed into the ORV world, and yeah. starting with the Manufacturers Association, down to the state organizations, and then the local clubs and organizations, and of course the DNR, you know, supports that 100%. And one of the major focuses of the safety campaigns that we do does relate to the dangers of interfacing alcohol with off-road vehicles and mountain bikes and basic recreation activities.
Yeah, it's an $8.2 billion annual expense. Should it be classified as a public health problem?
Well, I think we know that children are representing about 30% of the deaths and injuries, ER visit requiring injuries with ATVs. So I think it's important for parents to remember, you know, kids in these, first of all, kids under 16 shouldn't be driving them. If they're designed for one passenger, they should not have more than one in them. And, you know, certainly people should wear the appropriate gear.
Okay. I'd like to remind our television viewers and especially our radio audience who we're talking about outdoor hazards and precautions with Marquette County Health Department Medical Director Teresa Frankovich, Marquette County Sheriff's Department Special Operations Spokesman Corporal Errol Lukarainen, and Michigan Department of Natural Resources Recreation Specialist Ron Yesney. Boating, personal watercraft, ORV safety are concerns for adults, but might especially apply to youth as they're allowed to operate such vehicles. What are the restrictions? What safety instruction is available, and what hazards should parents and young people be most aware of across the spectrum of those things?
Well, I can talk about the safety side of it. From an off-road vehicle world, it's not legal for a minor under the age of 16 to operate an off-road vehicle without adult supervision. Now, if they have an off-road vehicle safety certificate and they're operating with an adult, they can start legally operating at the age of 12. But that off-road vehicle safety certificate is very important. We do offer that. Some of the school systems offer it. Some of the law enforcement agencies offer it. And a lot of our off-road vehicle clubs and organizations are starting to offer off-road vehicle safety classes. We are looking for off-road vehicle safety instructors, and there's a process the DNR has for basically training someone to become an off-road vehicle safety.
You actually have teacher training and recreation safety.
We do, and it involves some volunteer time, but it's also important to our youth. The off-road vehicle industry is growing. Mm-hmm. It's booming right now. Everybody's buying them, and more and more local municipalities are opening up the roadways. We're trying to accommodate the usage by developing more trails, but we're behind the spectrum a little bit because it's a little bit more difficult to develop an off-road vehicle.
How long is the program for teacher training in recreation safety? Who's qualified?
Yeah, the one we offer, it's a couple days. Okay. Most of the trainings occur in Roscommon, so there's...
You have to be above the age of 18?
You have to be above the age of 18. You have to have a legal driver's license, and there's a few other requirements. I think there's a background check.
Okay.
I would also say that off-road vehicles that, although legally kids down to 12 can may be able to operate them, the recommendations from groups such as the American Academy of Pediatrics are that kids under 16 really are not equipped to safely manage them, just from a developmental standpoint.
Okay.
So it's something for parents
to
consider.
Something for lawmakers to consider, maybe. Many of the outdoor-related mishaps and emergencies, from boating and swimming accidents to lost hikers, exposure are handled by the county sheriff's personnel. Errol, tell us a little bit about this summer and search and rescue stuff.
Okay, well, this summer it started off a little bit colder than usual, but now when it's starting to warm up a little bit, more people are going to start venturing out to the beaches and waterfronts, and it's important that that you use safety when you're out there recreating. And okay. if you're not a good swimmer, and as for the parents, that you got to pay attention and you got to watch your children. 9 out of 10 people that drowned aren't wearing a life jacket, and you need to be very, very careful. And if you're not a strong swimmer, even if you're an adult, it's a good idea to wear a life jacket. And if you're out there boating, mm-hmm. It's a good idea to wear a life jacket also, even if it's not required by the law.
Okay. What about safety in the woods?
Safety in the woods, it's important that you tell someone where you're going, and when you're going to be back, have some type of a plan. If you're going to be on an ORV, if you're going to be on a mountain bike or just out hiking or fishing, that you tell someone where you're going, when you're going to be back, and have some type of a plan with you. Have some type of a pack and a survival pack with you, and take the required equipment with you. And if
how about a cell phone?
A cell phone is important, and if you get yourself in a situation where you need help, it's a good idea not to call a family member. It's important to call 911. And by calling 911, it gives the central dispatch a GPS location, and it gets rescue personnel out there a lot quicker. Yes.
Yeah. Because if you were to call a family member, for example, they wouldn't be able to track you that way, right?
No. And then a lot of times they call a family member, and they'll end up calling 911, and we don't know where that person is. Okay. So it expedites the process if they do call 911, they get themselves in a situation.
I see. We had 54 drownings last year associated with the Great Lakes, but there are also problems with lakes and streams, break walls, all those sorts of things. These are tragically common in the summer because people drown at a rate nationally of 10 per day, and two of those are kids. So the question here is, what's the best precaution relating to children when it comes to water safety?
Well, I'd certainly say life jackets. Okay. You know, any child, as with adults, any child on a boat should have a life jacket on. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes families depend on, certainly with lake and river swimming, or in pools, depend on floaty type of things rather than life jackets.
Okay.
And for kids who are non-swimmers, they really need it. And I think there are many parents out there who can tell you that they turned away for one moment and their child was under the water and needed to be pulled out. So I think when we're talking about pools, we need 4-foot fences. Some of the larger inflatable pools now that people are using usually don't have fences. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely a safety issue, especially for young children. And also having no one swimming alone,
yeah.
Reinforcing that with children.
I've heard the most important precaution when it comes to especially water safety in children is supervision. Mm-hmm. You see a lot of cases in which kids weren't supervised and the worst has happened or near worst.
Correct. Supervision is the key to survival and making sure everybody's safe on the water. And when you turn your back away for a little bit, that's usually when a tragic event happens. So being supervised, don't leave the kids unattended by the water even for a couple minutes, and make sure that they do wear life jackets and use the buddy system. Just make sure you're swimming with somebody, wear that life jacket, and if you are in distress or somebody becomes in distress, make sure that you call 911 as quick as possible.
Okay.
And parents should remember, too, that even small bits of water are an issue. You know, the wading pools, you know, large barrels of water that are in the yard, right? It doesn't have to be.
Okay. I wanted to touch on, you'd mentioned, everybody here has mentioned life jackets. There are other sorts of protective gear that are important when you're riding off-road vehicles and things like that. Do you think parents are generally up to standard on such matters, Ron?
Well, I think the knowledge that we need to, you know, get out there is not just protective gear, but also trail sharing. Mm-hmm. We're dealing a lot with a lot of that, and we're dealing with multiple use trails in the summertime. So the same trail that's open to mountain biking is also open to hiking. It's also open to equestrians. So you have interface with horses, and sometimes it's open to off-road vehicle use. So we're developing sort of a yield to system, and we're putting signs up yet this summer. But typically the horse is at the center. Mm-hmm. So anybody that's on a mountain bike or on an off-road vehicle or hiking that comes across a horse, they need to yield to that equestrian. Let them know that you're coming at them or coming behind them. Mm-hmm. Let them know and then pass by at a safe distance. It's very important. We've had a few unfortunate accidents with bicyclers and hikers that come too close to horses. So okay. Horses have the right-of-way, followed by the hiker, followed by the biker, followed by the off-road vehicle user. So the off-road vehicle user pretty much needs to yield to everyone. But by that same token, if you're out there and you're hiking or you're mountain biking and you come across an off-road vehicle, don't just assume that you have the right-of-way and go zipping in front of them. You know, use some common sense.
Okay. We've got a couple of minutes here. Long hours of exposure to the sun can be a source of problems in the summertime. Sent 4,500 people to the hospital last year. The question is, the ailments we're talking about here, I think primarily are dehydration and the stages of heat stroke. What's the best advice there?
Well, I think it's a good idea to, particularly if people are participating in activities, exercise, decrease the intensity if the temperature is up. People should go into the exercise already well hydrated, not thirsty.
Okay.
And then it's a good idea, particularly with children, to interrupt every 20 minutes or so that they can drink. If the activity is less than an hour, water is generally fine. If it's going to be longer than that, then oftentimes, sports drinks, things like that, are a little more beneficial.
Okay. When you have to rescue somebody in the woods, I imagine dehydration may complicate things for those people, right?
Yes, it does. Okay. Yeah.
Is there a protocol related to that?
Well, a lot of people aren't prepared when they go out into the woods. they don't have that survival pack with them. They should have some type of food, some type of drinks with them. Or if they are got themselves in that situation where they got lost or confused, a lot of times they drink that water early. And they do become dehydrated. So
okay.
As rescue personnel, we try to bring some fluids in there also. But
people don't realize that dehydration can be a very complex kind of thing, and the effects of it are really debilitating.
Mm-hmm. Right, and in fact, with heat exhaustion, which is the early phase before heat stroke, mm-hmm. Certainly if people are out and being active in the heat, if they become lightheaded, dizzy, nauseous, mm-hmm. those are signs that you generally need to rest and hydrate before you reach a stage of heat stroke, which is much more serious.
Okay. We talked about eating and drinking here. Another heat-related summer hazard is foodborne illness.
Mm-hmm.
We just have about 30 seconds here. A lot of cookouts and weddings. Mm-hmm. What should people be doing?
Keep food cold. Cold food needs to be cold.
Okay.
So pack it tight in waterproof containers in an insulated bag, mm-hmm. and make sure it stays cold, and then cook it thoroughly.
Okay. We've been talking about outdoor hazards and precautions with Marquette County Health Department Medical Director Teresa Frankovich, Marquette County Sheriff's Department Special Operations Spokesman Corporal Errol Lukarainen, and Michigan Department of Natural Resources Recreation Specialist Ron Yesney. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
I'm Bill Hart. Thanks for joining us on MediaMeet.
The preceding program was produced in studios located in the Edgar L. Hardin Learning Resources Center by WNMU-TV, Northern Michigan University Public Television.